Hello everyone, Barney here. Welcome to Loco Ludus. This episode is all about alluvial plains, and the bulk of it comes in the form of some great messages from extended messages from Spencer of Keep Off the Borderlands and Safer from Safer Fantasy Crafting. And Safer talks about the Braylam campaign and also about the Creswell Crags game that he and I played with Jen from Creswell Crags. And Spencer talks about the Braylam campaign too. So those are going to come later, and I'm really just going to let those roll. But first, I would like to start with a big apology. In my last episode, when I talked about Alluvial Plains and who is working on it, I forgot to mention Tom Barbalay. And that is a terrible, terrible oversight, and I'm incredibly sorry for that. So my absolute deepest apologies to Tom for that. I was thinking, why did that happen? Why did that happen? So I've turned that over in my mind, and I think the first thing, simplest thing, is that at the moment I'm really tired. And there's so many things going on. And I just went into a kind of autopilot. And why did it come out like that? I think because Tom joined the project later on. And that line of that I'm working on Alluvial Plains with Spencer and Dave, I'd said so many times. That when I went onto autopilot, that's just what I said. So that's my rationalization of how that came to be, but that doesn't excuse it. So I want to try and just set the record straight here. To be working with Tom and Spencer and Dave on Alluvial Plains is just great. It's so great. They're three amazing people. And even though we haven't had the chance to really lock, you know, bash heads, lock horns together directly, I have the great pleasure of being the kind of intermediary between them all, and that's wonderful. Dave brings great thought. Well, they're all really thoughtful. So, I mean, you know, this is going to sound ridiculous, but my exchanges with Dave are wonderful. His illustrations are wonderful and so important and inspiring to all of the game designing that I do and that he's involved in. Spencer, well, I mean, you know, I just redirect everyone to the great discussion on Spencer's Keep Off the Borderlands, where we talked about magic. And that was, you know, there was a good few episodes on that, and that was really wonderful. And Spencer, I think, has been the most regular of anyone playtester. In the game, so it's been that's a wonderful thing. That's been a really valuable thing. Tom has Tom has performed the wonderful function of being the first person to run Alluvial Plains. That isn't me, and running it for me, and so that has and always will be a most wonderful thing, and I look forward to when we can do that again. Tom is working on the bestiary, and he tells me that it's a first draft, materials gathered. Is nearly ready, and he can send it over, which puts him kind of, you know, a good stretch. You know, Spencer's been working on herbalism, so Tom and Spencer have, are really paving the way with all of that. Whereas I keep tweaking the rules and running all of these different games and letting that all ferment in my mind a bit more. So, anyway, what am I saying? I'm saying that I hope we can really get together and get Alluvial Plains to its next step. We're not running behind because there is no schedule to run behind, and it just keeps growing and flowing, and that's great. That's great. Tom is very busy because he's just become a father for the first time, but doubly so. So I know that Tom is quite busy with a new phase of life. It's also worth saying that Tom has been a wonderful presence in my podcasting life, because his podcast was the first podcast I ever appeared on. And that's the Just Plain, not just, that's his game. Tom's game is Just Plain Chaos. That's one of Tom's games, Just Plain Chaos, which I've had the great honour of playing in, and playing with some of his gaming colleagues. And Tom's podcast is called My Rules Are Better. And so that is a really special thing as well. And Tom he's not always on hand, but he's frequently on hand. He has a tendency to pop up when I need him most, to ask me really tough questions, to put me to task about everything, and that's great. And you can if you haven't heard mine and Tom's discussions, there are several on here on Loco Ludus, and also several on My Rules Are Better where we chat. So if Tom's not getting back to the mic anytime soon, that's a good opportunity for people who haven't listened to My Rules Are Better to catch up with what Tom's been doing and how I pop up now and again in all of that. But I also have another very small apology to make, and that is to Joe Richter. What did I do wrong, Joe?
Yo, what up, dude? So you try and combat my drunken ramblings with some sober logic, huh? Nice move. I do want to say, though, that I had listened to your episode before Friday. I was just re-listening to it so I would have some stuff to yell at you about. but just thought I'd put that out there.
Aha. So, in the last episode, you can hear Joe complaining that I should put episodes out more frequently. And I, in response, I complained that if it took Joe a month to listen to my episodes, why should I put them out more often? So Joe is really coming back at me there by saying that he was re-listening to it. He's listened to it twice, my episode twice. So even more, you know, shame on shame for me this week. Thank you for listening to, you know, an episode of mine twice, Joe. I'm honoured. Anyway, here we go. I'm going to let Safer talk about Braylam, followed by Spencer talking about Braylam, followed by Safer talking about the Creswell Crags game, and then that's going to be the end of the episode.
Well, Barnabas, I'm just about to go and chastise some of the minions, and I would rather not be disturbed. So here is your free manifestation. I just need to take shape.
Hello, Bonnie. How are you doing there? Thank you. Here's my report on your Alluvial Plains game, your Braylum campaign. I just want to say thank you very much, Bonnie. It was a great campaign. I really enjoyed it. I'll talk about my reasons for enjoying it, what I learned from it, and then I'll finish on some of my ideas on the actual Alluvial Plains system, on the Vantage system. So I really enjoyed the game, partly because, I mean, well, actually, Safinio was saying he was intimidated about having to play the game with all the Anchor podcasters. And that was nothing. I mean, I was intimidated about playing the game with Safinio. I mean, a game designer, and used like all other game designers, well-established role players and Anchor podcasters playing for years. I felt intimidated by it all. But, you know, say you're a welcoming group. You let me make a fool of myself freely, and I warmed into it. So, you know, I really enjoy playing the game with you all. And I also enjoyed the conceit of it, the concept of it, the idea of playing a family, because, you know, I've never really done that before. When I was younger, when I was playing the game in the 80s, I got tired of the game, to be honest with you, Bonnie. I got tired of the old fantasy tropes, you know, save the world, uncover the big bad, you know, tromp through the dungeon. It all just got stale on me. And I think all of us, we all ended up playing very gimmicky games at the end. So the chance to just play as a family and just see the interactions between the players was a really nice novel experience, and I really enjoyed it. And as playing as one of the sons, playing as Colin's sons, I was just going to watch Colin. I'm going to see how he plays it, see what sort of character he develops. And then I'm going to perhaps just play off that. I'm going to play like a chip off the old block off that. I'm going to try and take elements from Colin's personality and perhaps modify it a bit. So I had great fun playing with Shade's personality and developing him and just messing about with it. And setting my own agendas for the character as well. Really enjoyed it. Really enjoyed the interaction and the exploration of the different play styles and develop and learning about my play style. And one thing, you know what Andy was saying about finding it difficult as a player, because, and I sympathise with that, as if he's a GM going from being involved 80% of the time of the play down to, say, you know, a maximum of perhaps a third or a quarter of the time, I imagine that could be quite tough for a GM. But with the way I don't really suffer from that as a player, because the way I play, which, you know, that sort of self-indulgent, immersive bullshit method of mine, there's positives and negatives that I've found about that. One of the positives is that I'm never really not playing. And some of my best times is when I'm not interacting with the GM, when I'm not, haven't got the spotlight on me, because that's the time when I'm building that imaginary world in my head. The times when I'm listening to the other players and the GM, that's when I'm imagining the scenes, when I'm picturing the shadows and the lights and the glows, the orange glow from the fires on the people's faces, and I'm imagining the smells and the atmosphere of the scene. I'm putting on the clothing of the character, and I'm doing all that almost like an extra in the background. I even end up doing what I call my little mini LARPing, which obviously, you know, I imagine a lot of people ridicule and laugh at. I'm sometimes miming the actions of my character in the background when other people are playing. So when we're at Tap Butchers and Tap gave me a bowl of soup, I was imagining the scene. I imagined it all wrong, actually. I imagined it in a sort of like Dark Age, Wattle and Daub hut, rather than a sort of Stone Age environment. But I made the scene in my head, and then I imagined my character listening to what was being said. And I imagine him getting more and more frustrated because his father had just been killed and getting angry. And I started miming my character spinning the bowl round and round on the bench in front of him, getting more and more agitated. And so I'm doing, so I can't do that when I'm interacting directly with the GM, because you're having to think of responses and that. So I don't get to do all that immersive world building, fantasy world building in my head when I'm actually playing, when I'm actually directly involved in the game. But one of the downsides of that I've found playing like that is that because I'm kind of working myself up into a bit of a lather about it, I'll often break table etiquette. I'll break some of the rules. I'll just burst things out because I've kind of hyped myself up into a sort of situation or a frame of mind, and I'm starting to feel some of the emotions a bit of the character. And I know that's it's proven a bit detrimental to the group, the meta group relationship, because when you're playing like that, you're not really playing. You're not playing like a normal player does, how they're thinking about what they can do to win, what's the best thing they can do. Most players play in a very optimized, thoughtful manner, a very tactically calm manner, trying to think of something that's either cool or it's going to work for them. But when the way I'm playing it, I'm just deluding myself that I'm actually playing the character, so I'm being that arsehole who's getting close to just doing what your character does. And I've realised, although I think that little immersive world of mine is mine and I can't really share it with anyone else, I've learned I have to share it with the other people. I have to share some of my thought processes and what's going through my head. Otherwise, I've noticed that people are just thinking, you know, what the hell's he doing now? Why is he doing that? How's that helping? You know, where's that going? Why are you wasting time doing that? And, you know, you see people's eyes rolling at what you're doing. So I learned that I had to explain some of my thought processes and motives and emotions behind what my character was doing to try and head that off, to at least explain to the other players why I'm doing what I'm doing. And I think that helped a bit, but I think I'm still a bit of a problem player, really. No, so I think I've improved playing with you. I've learned a lot. I've seen the way you GM, I've seen the way Andy GMs, I've seen the way that the other people play. And I'm learning about their different approaches to it, and I've enjoyed the experience, and I've found it an educational. Like I've felt, I've improved a bit. I hope I have. But in terms of the actual system, I've noticed that at first, when I read the rules, when you gave me the original version of the rules, I think it was version 12, I think you gave me, I was like, oh my God, what is this? It was so new and strange to me. This dice pool system—it was unlike any of the basic 2d6 or d% ILob or dice 20 systems I'd played, and I thought, oh my God, what, you know, adding dice and it was the way, you know, the dice were converted into bracketed into groups. It wasn't just the numbers on the dice; it was the idea of 1 to 3 being a moderate difficulty, 4 and 5 being a extreme a hard difficulty, and the number 6 being an extreme difficulty. And I had a bit of difficulty getting my head around the concept at first. But it's not that it's difficult, actually. It's actually quite a core mechanic. And I've noticed as the game's gone on, although there was a lot more sort of mechanisms in the original game, there was ideas like serious wounds and shock and different concepts and different status effects to be applied to players. I've noticed all that's been reined back as we've been playing, and it's become a far more free-form game, and it's just gone back to this core dice pool system, which is actually, once you realize what you're doing, it becomes a very intuitive system, and you get into it straight away. And I've noticed, rather than having certain actions prescribed to us, that, you know, you add this when this is the situation, and you add this when this is the situation. There's a bit of negotiation been going on with you as the GM. So you will describe the situation and what you've called the role for, and then we'll sort of have a bit of negotiation. That, well, can I add this skill to it? Would this contribute to it? Can I have this? Excuse me. And it's become that interaction, negotiation, agreement, give and take between player and GM before we decide on the final role. So it's become a far more negotiated freeform system rather than a prescribed. It's become lighter. It's become less crunchy as the game's gone on. And we haven't really had a chance to play the shamanic system much. But we even seem to have moved away from the idea of providence and having a dice, a sort of a resource, a pool of providence to use. for the shamanic resonances. So the shamanic resonance just seemed to be a sort of preference, have become a preference that your character has for certain ways of dealing with things. So, like, if my character had the shamanic reference of wood, it was like, in any given situation, I would be looking to perhaps utilize something made of wood to give me that extra bit of dice pool in the situation. And somebody else who might have, say, like stone, they would be looking to use like a piece of flint or stone as a solution. So it's actually created, the freeform created a bit of like character development and character preference in a strange way. But yeah, so I found the system has actually got more freeform, lighter as we've gone on. It's clearly still in development. I think we still need to look at the shamanic. We've never really played as a shaman. We've never really delved into that and used much of that. But as it stands, it's a really easy freeform system and quite quick to get into. And it's just a basic core mechanic that is, you can apply to almost any situation with a little bit of discussion and negotiation. So I quite enjoyed the way the direction that the game development has gone. I look forward to any opportunity. If you want to play a future game, I'm happy to play any future games with you, Barney, if you want to explore the shamanic system. I'd look forward to doing that. And I don't know, are we going to end up with a full FKR system here? Because it's really, you said your GMing for the Braylon game was really light touch. And you allowed us to choose the direction of it, and it was just a very improvised game. And it was. And I think the rules in development along with that sensibility of the campaign is becoming a light touch rule system as well. So I don't know what your thoughts on it. I'd love to hear your thoughts on it on your podcast, Barney. But yeah, that's all I can think of. I've took enough of your time. That's 12 minutes. Okay, so I'll get back to chastising the minions. Okay, take care then, Barney. Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Hello, Barney. Spencer here, and just answering the call for thoughts and reflections on the Braylon campaign. First of all, I wanted to address the message that Andy left concerning the action and your thoughts, or rather a kind of a concern that Andy might feel that the action was somehow switched on following his message. But I felt that obviously that was where things were heading throughout the entire campaign, and for me the whole thing had a very satisfying shape to it. In fact, that first session, the shape of that first session was almost like a kind of microcosm of what happened over the campaign. And I'm not suggesting that was orchestrated in any way. That felt very natural. Yes, and it was, you know, it was unfortunate that Andy was missing out, you know, in the last half hour or so of each session. And although that was really well managed during the session, through play, listening to Andy's recollection there, it's quite clear that he missed out on some pretty significant events. So ultimately getting a different perspective on how things were playing out. It was interesting as well listening to Andy talk about, I think in a previous message, about the motivations for his character, because my character, Persa, the fact that he was the, you know, the elder of the group, he was very much concerned about protecting this tradition of the Braylon festival, you know, wanting to expose this corrupting influence of the bowlers, the extent of that, and how it was tainting the proceedings. So, yeah, those early sessions, the earlier sessions arriving at the festival and kind of
trying to gauge the situation, speaking to different parties. My thought was always about trying to find out how unhappy everybody was with the way things were. And, you know, did we have their support? If push came to shove, were they going to help us? And that wasn't as clear cut as I thought. And in fact, I have to say, I think I was really quite surprised how each session played out. It always was somehow subverted. It didn't meet my expectations in a way, not in a disappointing way, just in a, this isn't going to be easy, because things were not going our way. And with every bit of information we uncovered, it just felt that more and more chips were being stacked against us. And that support Persa was looking for was not forthcoming. And things were a lot less clear-cut and a lot more authentically messy, I guess, in the sense that a lot of people I was interacting with felt that confronting the bowlers was more trouble than it was worth. And it's funny, what kind of came out in that last session was something that my character had kept in mind, I had kept in mind, throughout the whole campaign, was that this person who we met in that first session claiming to be a bowler turned out to be a thief. That was all we really knew about him. And that were we going to be questioned about that? You know, that was my thinking as far as our defence for being in possession of this stuff, was the fact that we had been robbed and we found that this person was also in possession of the bowls. Now, I remember when Pike, Colin's character, was questioned about this, he kind of doubled down on his indignation, I felt, which, I don't know, from my perspective, it made the situation a little more complex. And following on from Safinho's message, where he spoke about tone, and it was interesting that we had that earlier conversation about tone, possibly following the session where the boys were introduced to a couple of girls, which led to some very amusing adolescent awkwardness. And it was nice how the girls were brought back in at the end in the denouement, like Chekhov's gun. Because, you know, I had wondered whether that was actually going to lead anywhere. So I felt that was nice. And then obviously, yeah, after that conversation about tone, we then had the situation of Pike's body being discovered, which led to a very kind of solemn session. And as far as, you know, dealing with players having to leave and characters dying, I really felt it added to how things were playing out. It certainly made sense within the story. These become key events rather than being awkward situations that we had to deal with in the managing that loss of players. It really helped to add to the story. I'm not sure what else I've got to add there. I mean, other than, you know, everyone was fantastic and it was really an enjoyable game and very surprising, enlightening. And thank you very much for facilitating that. So, yeah, thank you very much, Barney.
Well, mortal, lucky for you, invoking my full Sunday name on a Saturday. So close.
Hello, Bonnie. It's just safer here. I was just about to have a cup of tea there when I got the summonings. Bit awkward, that. I shouldn't have released that, I don't think. Shouldn't have let my full true name out. Might have to see if I can speak with Pyreshi, see if I can get that changed. Although I hear Kanya, it's a bit too cool for me, that place. Anyway, what was it you were summoning me for? Yes, to speak about Alluvial Plains in the Cresswell Crags game. Yeah, definitely. I found it a really interesting and rewarding experience. In truth, I mean, it was a bit intimidating. I was playing alongside an expert in the Neolithic, well, not Neolithic, the Paleolithic field. I was kind of like, you know, I'll just let her take the lead. She obviously knows what she's talking about, and I'll just follow her lead sort of thing. But she was a great gamer as well, so she knew both the role-playing and the region. But I found that, yeah, as you said, I found it almost like a sort of interactive seminar, really, more than just a role-playing game. It was like, you know, we're having the little gamey bits, and then we would stop and she would discuss and talk about how things were done. So, you know, we'd had a bit where we had to... We were at Creswell Crags, and then there was a little talk about what kind of habitation we would have there, whether we would have huts or would we just have lean-tos, and what sort of materials would our houses be made out of. We didn't have trees, we didn't have wood, we would have perhaps reeds, and would have skins, sort of like yurts or tents. And then when we had to travel to the site to make the offerings, we had a little break where she was discussing the kind of offerings we'd have, the kind of like herbaceous plants that were available at the time. And then we were discussing means of travel and how we would, what sort of, well, in the area with it being waterways and swampy, where there's a lot of boating, I kind of thought of the coracle. And then she confirmed the different types of vehicles that they would have and the different means of transport they would have. And so we were playing the game. It was almost like one of those children TV shows, like where there's a guy, he does a safari show, and then he sees something, and then he'll cut to his little tablet or something, and there'll be a little bit of like box text, little description from the computer describing what it is that he's looking at, and then he'll go on to his adventure. It was really like that. It was like an interactive learning seminar, as I say, not like a children's class, but more like a seminar. And I think the value to Cresswell Crags and to learning is that how role playing and storytelling could be utilized to provide an educational platform. Because I mean, as I was saying at the time, I mean, the memory people, the people who remember long lists of words for competitions, they just use that technique of getting the list of words and then building a story around those words as a way of like an aid memoir to it. And so I think it's got great potential as a educational tool, not just for Cresswell Crags, for anything really. But the actual game itself, yeah, I really got a lot of value out of it, learning all those different things that Jen kept in. I don't know how much Jen got out of the game. I don't know if she felt a bit like I was, you know, pouring water on some of her plans, and she had some. She seemed to want to make some quite complex contraptions and devices and things, and I don't know if she felt a bit stifled by me, but I found her input, and I at the time I described it as I thought she was tempering the game. She kept hardening and strengthening the game. So I mean, if it was just left to me, I would have veered off. I would have started in the Mesolithic Cresswell Crags, and I would have just veered off and got things wrong and ended up, I don't know, somewhere like a fantasy. I would end up like a fantasy place like Beleriand or something. I just would have made a mess of the story. But she kept bringing the game back to a factual core, and it was like tempering the game. She kept bringing it back to a realistic core. And far from making the game boring or mundane or tedious, it actually added so much richness and flavour to the game that I thought it was great. I really, really enjoyed it. So, yeah, I mean, I mean, if you want to play the guy, if you just want to have sheer flights of fantasy, but the creativity that came from the game, I think, from knowing the way that the people behaved at in that times and the sort of rituals and the foods that they ate and the behaviours that they had, really actually gave us extra options. It didn't limit us in the game. It didn't, like, curtail our creativity. It actually acted as a spur for our creativity. So I thought it was a great game, and I'm glad I played it, and I'm glad you let me play the game, Barney. So thank you for that. Take care. I'll get back to my tea now. If there's anything else you want to summon me for, you know the invocation. I'm going to try and get that changed, though.
Wonderful thoughts there from Safer and Spencer. Thank you both very much for that. I think they make sense on their own, but if not, of course, go back and listen to the other episodes on Alluvial Plains, and I think more perhaps will become clear. My thanks also to committed listener Joe Richter, and once again my great thanks to Tom Barbalay and the rest of the Alluvial Plains team. That's all for now. I think the next thing is going to be something on the launch of the Trickster's Net project, and I think that'll be coming out sooner rather than later. So I hope you will listen into that. All the best. Bye-bye.